Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, they will tailor a quote to your exact needs, saving you money on your annual moped, bike or scooter insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Now, today's guest is quite simply racing royalty, a lady who can lay claim to the fact that she was the first woman to be on the podium at the Isle of Man TT. She also held a Guinness World Record for the fastest lap on that mountain. She's an author, a Hollywood stunt double. She can do the lot. Please welcome our brilliant guest, Maria Costello, MBE. I just want to say quickly, MBE. Prots, you're the only person here who hasn't got an MBE, by the way.
Right, you two talk amongst yourselves. Bye.
Bye.
Maria, thank you so much for joining us today. It's going to be brilliant.
My pleasure, my pleasure. I just need to clear up that a little bit because it does confuse people. I was the first woman to stand on the podium in a race around the TT course at the Manx Grand Prix. So just to clarify that.
Just take it. Just take the introduction. We should just listen. If I accidentally promote you,
races.
Okay. Well,
Obviously went on to podium in the classic TT. So that's another race around the TT course, and held the female lap record around the.
I mean, I know this. The clarification, obviously, Maria is most welcome. However, being the queen of bikers, it just adds to the mystique, really, doesn't it? Ewan and I were chatting just before we came on here and in the build-up to talking to you. And as he said, the list of achievements, the list of what you do is absolutely astonishing. So that's where you are now. Where on earth does all that start? What got it going for you?
Yeah, where did it all start? It started living in a little village with my parents, got a job as a veterinary nurse. I loved animals. And had a motorbike to get me to work on because I definitely like speed. Anyway, one morning got knocked off by a dodgy car driver. Actually, in my village, as my mum's walking down the street, I'm on the floor.
No.
Remember, the butcher came, you know, the butcher's is over the road. They came running over. Thankfully, I had broken my pelvis, but didn't have to stay in hospital. But I bashed up my motorbike, got compensation from the insurance company, and I bought a race bike.
I thought you were going to say for a minute, you used to commute to work on your bike and you were so fast, you turned up 20 minutes early every day. So you thought, oh, I'll quit that job. I'm obviously too quick on two wheels.
No, because initially I had this awful Honda Melody 50cc scooter that only just got me to work and was absolutely lethal because you had to like ride along in the gutter because it was so slow. And the vets always had to adjust the brakes because I was thrashing the poor thing.
Did you have to work? I was just thinking when you obviously we'll get on to how you first started racing, but back in those days when you were racing, even nowadays to a certain degree, was it very much a male-dominated world in terms of you had to prove yourself doubly? You had to be doubly good for people to take you seriously because you know, there you are, a young girl who knows what she's doing on a bike. You're quick. How did the male world respond to your success?
Well, you know, I got sponsors in my first year of racing because without sponsors, I couldn't go racing. I didn't have the funds. So I guess I realised that that's how you went about racing. But I got support without having turned a wheel. So I got in touch with my local newspaper and they backed me. And obviously the fact that I was female helped with that media attention and all of that. And then, turned up with my little RGV 250 Suzuki race bike with some mates that were already racing. I'd set up next to them and went racing. And it's a male-dominated sport. It's still a male-dominated sport. Obviously, there's more women in it now than when I started, thankfully. But, I'm often... You know, there's only a handful of us. Actually, only two women were competing on solos at the TT this year. So that kind of puts it in perspective. But yeah, I loved it. I loved it. I did a track day. The instructor said, have you thought about racing? And that was the green light for me to give it a go.
So, I mean, the instructor instantly saw what you could do. And is that then, that kind of dovetails into this next question, Marie, in the sense of you talk about the professional reaction to being a female in this particular sport, but what did the family say? Was it a case of, go on, Maria, go for it. You've obviously got something. Was there any reticence from parents or relatives or anyone like that saying, we don't think it's for you?
Massively. You know, my mum thought that accident was the end of two wheels, you know. Oh, thank heaven.
Some would see that, Simon. I love the fact that you went, I broke my pelvis and then I got a faster bike.
Yeah. Well, there was a group of lads I used to ride out with on our motorbikes, and they all turned up at the hospital with magazines going, what bike are you going to buy next? And again, it was all to my mum's horror. You know, she was petrified of the things. It didn't matter what I did, actually. I rode horses before that, and she was petrified of them. But, so started racing. And initially, oh, yeah, this is great, a girl in the paddock. You start beating them and they stop talking to you and they see you, then your competition. But I think that's quite normal. Yeah. I think it can be the same.
Pathetic, Maria. I'm sorry. That's just, yeah. It's terrible, man. It's just because you start beating them.
But going back to my family, yeah, they had no, it didn't come from my family. You know, they had no idea what I was doing. They were against it, really. They were a barrier that I also had to overcome to go into racing.
That's a credit to your mentality then. Not only did you have to go up against your parents probably not giving you the full support you wanted, but the fact that you broke your pelvis, most people, with all due respect, would fall off a horse or a bike in your case and go, that's it, it hurts, I ain't doing it again. Whereas you started, like Pratt said, you started racing off the back of that compensation money you got from being hurt. I mean, you must be pretty tough up there then to sort of have that never say die mentality. People maybe say you can't do it. What's a female doing in the paddock? And you're like, I'm here because I deserve to be here. That's a credit to you.
I guess it set the tone. It set the tone because I have broken 24 bones in my career. I've raced now for 30 years, so it evens out.
I suppose, yeah, that works actually. That's not as bad as it sounds.
Evil Knievel.
Not quite. I'm rubbish at stunts. Don't even go there. But yeah, so it was. It was a real battle. I think perseverance is my middle name. And it was difficult to go up against my parents. But I did it on my own. You know, I just really wanted to race motorbikes, and I still do.
That element of doing it on your own and the pleasure of doing this, Maria, with you, and is speaking to some truly extraordinary people. And when we talk about racing around the Isle of Man and the Manx Grand Prix, and that sense, you talk about being on your own, but the minute or the seconds before you actually take off, you are literally then on your own, aren't you? So it's just you, the bike, and that's it. Again, it's the thing that fascinates me off the back of playing football a very long time ago, and obviously you and competing at the highest level at athletics. It's a slightly different thing that once the whistle goes in football, you might get injured to a degree, but it's not life or death. Whereas that countdown goes on the bike, that last couple of breaths before you set off, it could be. I don't know. I mean, it could be the last lap, couldn't it? And that's a common theme to all the races that we talk to. What goes through your head at that moment?
Yeah, you know, you've given me goosebumps just talking about it, because it's a massive moment. And the TT is the event that I've just done. Mm. It's very different. You're not on a grid of 30 odd bikes sat on your bike already. You walk up to the road, to Glencrutchery Road for the start. Your bike or sidecar's already there, although I take my sidecar up onto the road actually. So you've got this unusual build up, and you are surrounded by your team, the people there supporting you, my passenger, whoever. But then you go into what's called no man's land. There's this small area where you are on your machine, on your own, staring down the Crutchery Road. And it is that moment of, what the hell am I doing? Why am I here again? Why am I doing this again? And I had a moment this year, I went, this is why you do it, Maria. Yeah. I know, yes, I was feeling the nerves. It's a place where you know, I've raced all over. I've done loads of different road races. I've been really fortunate, but there's nothing like the nerves you feel at the start of a TT race.
Do you know why? I can tell you why you do it, just from your response to perhaps mentioning the start line and you saying, oh, I'm getting goosebumps. And that, I think, is when we speak to all you amazing riders, there's something magical, and it's really hard to articulate it, but there's something magical about the TT and the fact that, yes, it is the element of danger, and yes, you are totally at one with your bike and you believe in your own ability, and that's why you do the racing. But unless you've witnessed it or been lucky enough to race it, you can't really describe it to a non-biker, because it is something just out of this world. It's magical. And to see the joy in your face when you were talking about it then, and I can see you almost going through the course in your head. It's amazing. And you know, me and Pratt are so fortunate to speak to people like you, Maria, to see your passion for two wheels, and it shines through. It really does.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, bike racing is me, such a massive part of me. You know, I try and have balance in my life, and but it is a huge part of me, and I like the way that makes me feel, and I love my sport still, and I love that I'm still competitive, you know, in maybe different classes at the Isle of Man TT, and getting to race there means the absolute world to me. Yes, you do have those moments before you start, you're like, what am I doing? And and you're saying, yeah, I believe it, of course I believe in my ability, but you have, even at the start line, sometimes I'll have a moment of doubt, and that's when you need good people around you. And I'll turn around to my mechanic and I'll go, I can still do this, can't I? And I had a wonderful mechanic there, Wayne, who we were doing our first TT together on the sidecar, and he had the perfect reply, and he went, in spades, Maria, in spades. Just get down on that road. And sometimes you just need those little moments. You know, we're all human, even though we might seem different. I'm still just a biker at heart. I'm just really fortunate that I went racing.
What's if you can tell us, what's more special, a podium or a world record?
Haven't had so many podiums. They're all super precious.
Yeah.
Obviously, the TT female lap record, fabulous to have held that for 5 years. Massively proud of that. Wouldn't mind going after the female lap record on three wheels on my sidecar now at the TT. That's obviously a bit of a name. But podium at the Classic TT. So this was on classic bikes, but I was third. John McGuinness won the race, and he's my hero. Okay, share the podium with John McGuinness. That's not going to happen at the modern TT. That's not going to happen. But for it to happen this way, I was on my last lap. I was getting pit boards on the mountain, third. And I was talking to my bike, you're just wishing it home. And I actually thought, I hope John's winning this race, because he'd had a lot of mechanicals in the past. And to share that podium with him, I mean, that's
amazing. Did you ever dream, as that young girl who fell off that bike, did you ever dream, one day I'm going to share a podium with someone who is a hero to me? I'm going to set world records, lap records. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to be an MBE. I mean, do you ever have to pinch yourself and think, I know you're still racing, you're still one of the most competitive racers, but to think the longevity you've had and the successes Two Wheels has brought you, I mean, that's really special.
No, I never. I never thought I'd be a bike racer. I didn't actually start this that early. I started when I was 19, 20. So that's really, for this sport, I'm coming into it very late. But that was the only way I was going to get into the sport, because I needed to be old enough to do it myself. So there were benefits in that way. But, of course, I still pinch myself. I'm competitive on certain machinery in certain events. I'm not saying I'm, you know, looking for success. I've found my place in the sport, and I've still got goals I want to achieve. And, you know, you talk about the MBE and all that. You know, I feel like I have a role now to give back to the sport, and that's probably where my sort of next aims are.
Just the mechanics of sidecar racing, Maria. I mean, is that vastly different to just being on a bike on your own?
No, this is really different. This is really different. So obviously I race solos, motorbikes for, you know, 30 years. Sidecars I've added in about 8 years ago. And yes, working with a passenger, that was so different for me. It's actually fantastic because you get to share this unique experience with somebody. So I've just come back from the TT. Alice Smith was my passenger. She's 20 years old. She did her first TT. Brave as hell. Her dad was a passenger, so that's where it comes from. That's actually, you know, the difference between us. She grew up knowing that that was something that she could potentially do. Anyway, and we came back with bronze replicas and fastest lap time that I've ever done on a sidecar. So made up. But yes, yeah, it's a very different discipline. You go from being sat on a motorbike to being relatively high up to then being solo because I'm kneeling, I'm leaning over my engine, my toes scrape the floor, and you've got a passenger that you won't get anywhere without.
I think that's so brave of both passenger rider. When I watch that, I just think they are bonkers. And you talk about being at one with a bike. And yes, when you're in control, it's you. You're controlling the bike. You know when to lean, when to come off the throttle and so forth. But when you've got that passenger who's literally hurling themselves, hanging off the sides to help you get the right grip. I mean, you both have to have so much trust in each other. You really do.
Yes. And I mean, the wonderful thing about Alice is she's got this fantastic enthusiasm. You know, she'd turn around to me at the start and go, should we go and have some fun? And I'm like, like how amazing. She hid her nerves anyway really well. And it was massively enjoyable. We went faster. But yeah, their skill is incredible. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it for the Teen China. You know, people are like, where's she clipping her seatbelt? I'm like, no, nothing's holding her on other than herself. And she has a platform that she works from. A lot of times she's, you know, she's tucked down and you can't even see her because she's tucked down so low. And then she's climbing over from one side to the other, moving the weight around to distribute grip. So, yeah, that, I'm loving racing sidecars. I'm loving it.
You can tell by look on your face, Marie. It's just a pleasure to listen. Just let's have a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get podcasts from. So that's sidecar racing. That's throwing yourself around with someone that you trust very, very much. Let's change gears slightly and talk about Hollywood and stunts and doubles and doing that type of stuff instead. I mean, are there as many pitfalls and potential obstacles in that, or is it just solid fun?
I've only done a tiny, tiny amount of that. There's Jenny Timothy does loads of that. She's in Mission Impossible all the time, which I'm so envious of because she gets to meet Tom Cruise. But I did some. Mine amounted to me riding a scooter in a movie. I was the rider double for Reese Witherspoon, who I didn't even get to meet. I think I met her for like a few milliseconds. And then there was another actress that was Pillian with me, and I won't lie, I was probably more nervous about doing this than riding down Bray Hill. And the first scene I had to do, I had to sit there. She was going to get on the back of the scooter and I just had to ride off around the corner. Well, of course, I set off before she got on. I messed it up first. I mean, I didn't make any more mistakes. And then I remember riding out a shot and there was just wall-to-wall paparazzi trying to get photos of Christina Ricci, it was, on the back.
Wow, my word.
No, she's a good actress, Pruss.
I mean, you did say that in a really odd way.
Sorry, I did. I said that in a creepy uncle way. Oh, I really like her. But that's amazing, though. Once again, to go back to you as a young girl starting out on two wheels, to think one day that would lead to, like, you know, helping out in a major Hollywood film. I mean, that's the thing of dreams. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, it blew my mind. I remember when the stunt coordinator rang me up and went, can you ride a scooter? I'm like, yeah, I think so. But the crew were amazing. I had my own trailer to get changed in.
So you're just like John McGuinness. You're just like, there's no difference. He's got a nice motorhome. You're the same.
I thought you meant a diva.
No, I mean, yeah, Hollywood diva. No, Can I ask then, in terms of you've obviously ridden some of the world's fastest bikes, then you go to Hollywood and you're asked to ride a little scooter or a little moped. I mean, what's been the best bike? Could you pick a best bike that you've ridden, or because you must have ridden all sorts of different bikes?
Yeah, a lot. Not super bikes so much, but from 1,000cc to 125cc, you know, full range of modern stuff and then classic stuff. So the classic pattern that I finished on the podium on is a beautiful piece of machinery, and what a beautiful bike. I'd seen, you know, people win on this at the Classic TT, and I was actually testing in Hungary for BMW Group Classic to ride some of their bikes at Goodwood, and one of these patterns was in the paddock. The guy and his wife who owned it, Peter and Barbara, they loved the TT. They'd been involved in the TT before. Anyway, they asked me to sign the tank of the bike, and I cheekily asked if I could have a go on it, which they let me. And this thing was, compared to all the other classic stuff, because I've ridden stuff where they've chromed the inside of the brake drum and you've got no brakes, and classic bikes, not always the easiest things to ride. They don't stop, go, or turn, but this pattern was out of this world. And I remember coming home and then emailing my friend at BMW and saying, I missed an opportunity there. I wish I'd asked if they would be interested in going to the Classic TT. And Sebastian said, right, here's Peter's email. I emailed him and we went to the Classic TT that year. I raced that bike for 7 years, and it is just the best bike I've ever ridden. We made history, you know, being the first woman to stand on the podium at the Classic TT with John McGuinness. I mean, that bike has a big place in my heart.
Do you prefer then, like, in terms of when you're racing, I'm assuming with a classic bike, you've got to really work it. You'll hear it, you'll feel it. As you said, it's not going to be as responsive or as trusting maybe as a modern bike with all the rider aids. I mean, with that taken away, what's easier to race? A modern superbike, which does everything for you with all due respect, you know, looks after you a little bit, or something classic where you're listening for any loose bolts and you can really feel the bike. What's harder to race?
I think anyone who rides a superbike would not agree with what you just said.
Okay. Oh, dear. We'll cut that bit out, though. No, but you know what I mean? You know
what's going on, like, you know, yes, what he's talking about. Right.
What I'm trying to say is modern technology with all the ABS brakes, you know, the yes, anti-wheeling, all that kind of stuff. I mean, obviously, I can't ride it to that level, but in a straight line, I can give it some. But with a classic bike, I'm assuming it's not going to handle as well. You've got to really race it.
They can be the quirkiest things ever. So I've also raced a BMW in 1929 BMW that's hand shift. So that's And I raced that at Goodwood, and the likes of Troy Corso won on one of those at Goodwood. These things don't have suspension. They have two springs in the seat, and they're like riding a bucking bronco. And you have to take your hand off the handlebar to change gear. Now, that is probably, you know, that comes second to the pattern, because riding one of those around Goodwood was a massive thrill.
That's what I meant, Maria. That's what I meant. Riding one of them is a lot harder than a superbike. That's what I meant.
thank you for being so gracious, Maria, with you, and absolutely kind of talking down at how amazing it is to go around something so very fast on a motorbike. Thanks for taking that one on the chin. Yeah, I mean, given that as well, and the bikes that you've ridden and do ride, do you, because it is another feature sometimes of stellar race people like yourself, that they won't go near a bike on the road because it's too dangerous. But do you ride for pleasure and to get out and just kind of enjoy it for what it is still?
That's where I started, you know, that's road riding. Yeah, look, that's where I started. I don't have a road bike at the minute, but it's purely financial because I put all my money into my racing, and it would probably sit there and wouldn't get used enough. Yeah. But I've worked for quite a few manufacturers on launches and things, and I got the opportunity to ride in Morocco. We were riding all through the national parks. And I'd love that opportunity. I would love to have a bike I could just jump on, especially when the weather's like this.
Yeah, glorious.
Rider. But no, that's at the heart of me, that I'm a biker. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, okay, so I race now, but at the core of it, it's that freedom, speed, you know, it's therapy, isn't it?
Yeah. Can I ask, we've touched on bikes you've ridden. Let's touch, if we can, about places you've ridden. I'm going to assume the TT is your favourite place to race. If it is, what would be your second favourite? Is there a close second, or is it miles behind?
I've been really fortunate. I got to race in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, America. New Zealand was really, really cool. They've got a road race in Whanganui called the Cemetery Circuit, which sounds a little bit scary. It's like, I think it's like 2 miles, if that. So it's tiny in comparison to the TT, but they're so passionate about it over there. And I got to ride a classic and a modern bike there. And this all happens on Boxing Day. So you've had Christmas Day in the sunshine, which was obviously very unusual for me. And then the next day you're up at 7 a.m. racing motorbikes around this crazy road race. So that was a very cool place to race motorbikes.
Just the way, I mean, it's sucking both you and myself. I can tell when he's really enjoying himself, Marie. He's got that look on his face where he's drifting off into what you're talking about.
I'm just thinking perhaps about beautiful places like New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, the picturesque, the scenery, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be absolutely glorious. I mean, I asked you about the world record and podiums, Maria, and what you've spoken about so far. Is there a most proud moment that sticks out for you? I'm sure everything that you've detailed in your wonderful book would lean us more towards that. But straight from you right now, is there anything that sticks out really for you?
Of course, everything I've achieved at the TT means the world to me. But getting the MBE for services to motorcycling was huge, because it really helped my family. Sort of, because my parents were like, what on earth is our daughter flying out with these motorbikes? Get a proper job, Maria. My dad used to take. I mean, I had proper jobs. I used to have 3 jobs and race a motorbike. I don't know how I did that back then. But the MBE, very special, because my family suddenly went, oh, hang on, if royalty think our daughter's doing okay, then, and my dad was really old fashioned and so wouldn't show his sort of proudness to me directly. I mean, when I started racing, I was still living at home, and after we got over the the barriers of that they tried to put in place to stop me racing, my dad would come and watch. And like I said, I used to set up with some of my mates. One guy was called Dave Weston, fantastic 250 racer. He kind of became my mentor and he would help me a lot. Anyway, we'd get home and my dad would talk about Dave Weston and all his wins nonstop. But would he mention me? Not really. But when I got the MBE, he couldn't be prouder.
Aww.
I guarantee you're talking about a man who reminds me of my dad. I bet he talked about you to everyone. I guarantee it. Behind your back, he would have been, well, have you seen her? My Maria's getting on. She's got an MBE, you know. But I suppose with the MBE, it's validation, isn't it? It's like it gives you that credibility of you're not only very good at what you do, but you're getting recognised by the highest tier of people for what you do. And your parents have to sit up then and go, hang on a minute, you know, she's been recognised by royalty, like you said. And, you know, I guarantee your family would have been very, very proud. And for you, then you can kind of almost just sit back and think, yep, I know I'm doing good. I'm doing something right.
You know, I was saying about my mum and how it was so difficult for her, and my dad didn't understand it either, but yes, they became my biggest cheerleaders, and obviously they're not with us now, and I miss it so much. They were like a barrier to start with, and I felt like I battled and battled against them, but then my dad was probably doing it hidden, but my mum would tell the postman. She didn't hide how proud she was. I mean, so when I got the letter for the MBE, as you'll know, you have to accept it or you can decline it. And my mum wasn't at home. I sat with my dad, opened this up. I thought it was a complete joke. I was like, who's done this? They've gone to some effort. This is some prank. And I was like, Dad, look at that. Does that look real? And he went, get that sign, get that back in the post and accept it. And I was like, okay. And he said, and it says you have to keep it secret. And he said, we better not tell your mum because she'll tell everyone. We did. We kept it a secret. I was working at the TT that year. I wasn't racing. I was working in the press office, and a journalist from The Sun emailed me and said, congratulations on your MBE. And I went, oh, it is real then. And that's why finally, you know, it had been published in the newspapers.
At least you responded. I genuinely thought mine was a joke and they had to write back to me because I ripped the first one up. I thought it was my mates from uni on some headed paper. I thought that can't be real. And then they wrote to me again and said, you haven't acknowledged our first letter. And I was like, oh, gosh, maybe it is real. But yeah, it's funny.
Second chance.
I think the great thing about it, obviously being the only person in this chat without an MBE, which is fine that you keep mentioning it.
It's never too late, Dave. It's never too late.
Great. Services to beard dye. That's what I'd get, which I don't, by the way. That's a joke. But that element of what you talk about, Maria, and I know it's something that Ewan's very proud of as well, because it is validation, it is acknowledgement, but it also reflects you as people that it's not just done for yourself in your little lane. It's what it opens up. And in your case, Maria, sorry to be kind of on message or whatever, but you look at the lionesses, you know what I mean? That belief that if you can't see it, you can't necessarily be it. So there'll be young women, young people looking at you going, well, she's done it. Obviously, you've got to be vastly talented and amazingly good at your job, but there's a door there that you've knocked open that others can follow through.
No, I mean, I might get some stick for, you know, talking about, you know, the fact that women can do this and highlighting the fact that women do this, succeed at this, and shouting about that fact. You know, some people are playing the gender card or whatever. But no, it's vitally important that young girls can see that this is an option for them. Mm-hmm. I came to it really late. But now you do see, you know, the proper youngsters, young girls, are on the small Avalé bikes or Fab Racing, the small bike championships that they can go into. One name I'm going to use is Chloe Jones. She's recently podiumed in this new Women's World Championship. And I remember meeting her as a kid at Stretton, you know, go-karting track with her parents. Talk about perseverance and hard work. She's put the effort in. I'm not massively into all-female championships, if I'm honest, because we can compete against the guys and win. So I, you know, obviously having a 30-year career trying to be taken seriously and trying to prove that for so long, it's hard for me to then go, okay, you know, I think it's a bit of a backward step. I don't think we need it, but I'm loving that it is, again, highlighting women in sport.
I think it's great to see that there's enough women in the sport to have women-only races in terms of you've definitely helped shape that. Now, we always like to finish with a really lovely question. Well, we think it's a nice question, Maria. So I think you've alluded to a couple of places, but we like to ask our guests, if you could have a fantasy ride, so you could be riding anywhere in the world, where would you ride? What bike would you be on? Would you have a passenger, maybe a sidecar? And also, what would be your soundtrack? What music would you be listening to? So where are you going? What bike you on? Who are you with? And what you're listening to?
This is a massive question.
Yeah, we love it.
So, yes, I've raced in New Zealand and I did get to do some road riding there. And wow, that country is so beautiful. The roads are amazing. So maybe I'd go there, but I'd also like to go Thailand, India. I'd love to do, you know, places I haven't seen as well. But maybe we'd pick New Zealand because I've got a clue of what that's like and it was just stunning. Motorbike, gosh, what am I going to pick? Maybe I do need to pick a sidecar because...
Classic bike or modern bike?
I think I'd pick a classic sidecar because then I can take my sister and my nephew.
Oh, nice.
And my nephew George is really good at doing playlists. We've recently been away and we were sort of van karaoke all the way there, all the way back. What would I pick though? I'm gonna have to go for what's springing into my mind right now is Hotel California.
Oh, yes.
Nice. Eagles, maybe a bit of that.
Very nice.
Nice.
With a bit more thought, maybe it'd all be different, but definitely taking my sister and my nephew, and I can only do that with a sidecar.
That's lovely. That's the first, I think you're the first guest that's had two passengers with you, so you can with the sidecar. So that's great. I love it.
A great tune as well. My daughter was born to Hotel California, which obviously when you're in that situation, when you're trying to get the music absolutely right, doesn't go down too well with the person that's doing all the donkey.
Wow. How old is your daughter?
Hang on. Let me go to the start.
Right, so I'm really pleased you clarified. Then your daughter was born to that. I thought you were going to say your daughter was conceived to that. I know that song's far too long for you, mate.
Oh, we're having such a nice chat as well, Marie. I'm so sorry.
Had to go there, didn't you, Ewan?
Sorry.
Yeah, but the man's got an MBE as well, Maria.
Not for much longer.
Cheapens the honour. You really highlight it. He cheapens it. I mean, this has been so much fun. I mean, and we could, as ever with a very good guest like yourself, Maria, we could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, but you're very busy, so we'll let you crack on. I mean, it's sadly the end of another week's full chat powered by Bikeshore, as UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. Bikeshore will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance, and so much more.
Thank you so much to our wonderful guest, the one and only Maria Costello.
Thank you, guys. It's been fabulous.
It's been wonderful. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
As ever, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.